For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Hello, dear listeners, and welcome to yet another episode of All My Best Friends Are Digital, a podcast about video games and the stories they tell. I'm one of your hosts, Caitlin Bailey, and as always, I have here with me my friend and co-host, Mark Bigney. Mark, how is the great frozen north treating you?
It is frozen, and it is great.
Wonderful. As always, we will start off by discussing the games we've been playing lately, and then we're going to jump into our gaming opinions on old school funware segment, where we talk about the game Golden Axe. After we discuss the pluses and minuses of minimal coverage armor, which I'm doing air quotes, but you can't see it, we are going to dive into our feature game, Avowed, which was recently released by Obsidian Entertainment. And then finally, we will engage in shameless hyping of upcoming titles in our Shout segment. So, let's get started. Mark, what have you been playing lately?
I've been playing a pre-alpha, Caitlin. I've decided to take your beta engagement, and I don't even know what pre-alpha means. This is new territory for me. I kind of understand what a beta is. This is a pre-alpha, and it hasn't crashed once, so I guess that's something. This is called The Hidden Ones. This is by Morfun Studios. They say it's going to be released later this year. I was originally attracted to it because it has these in-engine cutscenes of very impressive fight scenes. It's got that kind of cel-shaded style. Not entirely unlike the later Guilty Gears, like Strive and Exard. It took me a while to remember because Guilty Gear's naming convention is a war crime. But anyway, The Hidden Ones is many things. It is a competitive fighter. It is a brawler. It is a beat-em-up. It has parkour elements. I'm told that it's going to have stealth sequences later, but I have not yet encountered them.
Okay.
And part of this initially confused me. I'm like, pick a lane, guys. But I was thrilled. I was just really enjoying the different stuff that it was throwing at me. And then I realized, why is it that at quote-unquote action-adventure games get to not pick a lane, but anytime hand-to-hand combat is involved, it has to be a very specific thing. Like, you're either walking from the left to the right, or there's two of you in a fixed plane, or whatever. I kind of appreciate the fact that The Hidden Ones looked at this landscape, shrugged, and said, nah, we're just going to do whatever we want to. Now, The Hidden Ones is based on a manga series, Chinese manga series, and loosely based on an anime series that was an adaptation of that story called The Outcast. I have read a couple of chapters, and I've watched half of the first episode, and it was, what's the opposite of good? It wasn't good. I didn't enjoy it at all. I wanted to watch this because one of the things that's so bizarre about The Hidden Ones is that the character design is minimalistic, I think, to a fault. Now, I've talked before about how in fighting games, a lot of the character design has really gone over the deep end in the past few years. This is especially true of the series that I like the most, namely The King of Fighters. If you look at the main character of The King of Fighters 14 and 15, Shune, he has been whacked upside the head with the accessory stick way too many times. And he could do with easily half a dozen details stripped away from his character design. Part of me attributes this to a manga designer or a comic artist of some other type or someone who's normally used to drawing in 2D, told that they get to design a character in a 3D model. They're like, wait, all we have to do is render it once in polygons and then animate it? I can add whatever I want. And they just keep adding and keep adding and keep adding. And nobody has the guts to tell them to stop, for the love of all good things, good and holy, stop. Let me tell you about the two main characters in The Hidden Ones. So the male lead is sporting jean shorts. This is his thing. He's always in jorts.
Oh, he's a jorts man.
So you gotta admire the commitment. Jorts, a solid color t-shirt with a single color stripe, a baseball cap and sneakers. That's it. No accessories, unstyled hair. It's just, he looks like some slob that you'd see. Like, it's so bizarre. He's a very impressive undefeated Tai Chi master. And has spiritual powers to boot. I find it's so weird. The character design is so minimalist, I find it hard to take him seriously. The female lead, and this, again, it's kind of like, be careful what you wish for, Mark. We complain about the designs of female characters in games all the time, especially fighting games. She's wearing Oshkosh Bagosh loose-fitting overalls, a plain white t-shirt, and sneakers. That is her character design. Her hair is unstyled. She does not wear any accessories. And this is all just, like, very weird. Part of it I'm okay with, but part of it I'm still getting accustomed to. Anyway, in the Hidden Ones, what you do is grapple with its fundamental nature, which is to say that it is a pre-alpha of a free-to-play game. So the free-to-playness of it all, I have no idea how the economy is going to shake out, like in terms of actual real-world money. I can tell you that there is already a dizzying array of fake currencies that I only dimly understand what they do, but I do know that the game has been giving them to me for free, and I actually kind of like the free-to-play structure of it in that there are daily tasks, and if you do them, you get more currency for nothing, and there are rank advancements that kind of sort of gatekeep when you get to do the next story mission, which I'm not a huge fan of, but I can tolerate, and when you can unlock new difficulty levels, which then in turn encourage you to push your score levels higher, which unlocks more stuff. It's kind of a virtuous cycle. As I say, I kind of appreciate the structure. As somebody who used to be a Destiny player, I liked being able to know that I could just log in every day and have a new set of things to do, even if they were things I'd done before. I kind of appreciated that, and The Hidden Ones is definitely hitting those bases for me. So let's talk about the actual game. There's been a lot of talking around the game. Let's talk about the actual game. It is, most of the time, when it's not being a brawler, when it's not being beat 'em up, when it's not doing parkour or stealth, is a competitive fighter in an arena style. So you have full range of movement. And it's a shockingly interesting system. It's, at its core, like many fighting games that I appreciate, it's got a rock, paper, scissors element. Mm-hmm. You have basic skills that are on a cooldown, which can be blocked. You have normal attacks, which also can be blocked, but if you initiate the basic attack when you're really close, it will initiate a very damaging throw that is unblockable. And all of this is then in service of a variety of movement elements, which are how you dodge the basic attacks, which is how you evolve. Anyway, there's a lot going on, and then you can unlock other stuff, which are other special powers on cooldown called doppelgangers. These systems are, I confess, relatively well explained, especially given that it's in a pre-alpha state. And so you have a pretty solid model for combat. Now, I don't know how well this is going to survive being exposed to a bunch of competitive fighting game players. I suspect that this is a small company that is doing something relatively novel. So I would be very surprised if this survives contact with people looking to break the system. For my purposes, though, I am having a great time with The Hidden Ones. I enjoy all the modes. I normally don't play fighting games online very much. That's just not my vibe. I find it too sweaty, and there's a lot of unpleasant people online. Yeah. I've kind of enjoyed it in The Hidden Ones. Even with a little bit of latency, it's still kind of functional. And so far, I haven't seen anything too brutally exploited. But then again, I am very much in the shallow end of the pool of The Hidden Ones so far.
Oh, so are you playing... When you play The Hidden Ones, are you playing against real people?
There are three core modes that you can engage with in The Hidden Ones. You can play online against other people, and I've been doing that the least, but I've been doing it mostly in proportion to how many goodies the game will give me for doing this. You know, daily objectives and various other level-ups.
Yeah.
There is a trials mode where you engage in boss fights at increasing difficulty increments, and you're trying to increase your score. And then there is the story mode, which might have you doing whatever. Like, as I say, there's a whole... It's in the story mode that the game really flexes its weird muscles because it feels entitled and liberated to do whatever it wants to do. I really liked the parkour segment. It was really neat. I very much enjoyed the beat-em-up segment. That was kind of cool, too. It was a little bit of a variation on the formula. I'm looking forward to what else they decide to pull. The problem, part of the problem with the story mode is, though, that it's completely in medias res and it assumes you have some knowledge of the universe. Okay. So, like, Jorts shows up, and you're supposed to know who Jorts is. I don't know who Jorts is. He's just some guy. But apparently he's invincible, and he beat the crap out of some guy wearing suspenders in the opening tutorial, and this is supposed to be meaningful to me. It's not. I enjoyed doing it. It was kind of okay. But I the game wants me to care about Jorts. I'm having difficulty getting there.
How are the playable characters visually distinct from everyone else if they wear such everyman clothes?
They're not. Like,
they're not. Okay.
They're not.
Sure.
There are a couple of characters who have what I would call the beginnings of some sense of style. Like, there's one guy who wears slacks, a white button-down t-shirt, and suspenders. Mm-hmm. He's the guy that shows up in the first, like, tutorial mission. He's easily identifiable because he looks like he's dressing as a grown-up and not dressing as a slob, which is fine. There's another female character who I think is being presented as, you know, the cute one. She wears sweatpants, a graphic tee, and has her hair in two braids. So she actually put some effort into her presentation, not entirely unlike Dude with Suspenders. So they're kind of a step apart. There's another guy who initially I thought he looked really cool, and I thought that he was going to be the guy that actually was like a little bit of visual design. No, no, no. That's just him in his courier outfit. He works for UPS, the Chinese equivalent of UPS. So he's wearing a uniform in the opening cutscene. He doesn't wear that most of the time. Most of the time he's just wearing nondescript clothing while he's talking to Jorts. It's a whole thing, Caitlin. Will I take this over your traditional parade of ridiculous shonen archetypes and embarrassing sexpots? On balance, yes. But I find it amusing. It's just strange how we've gone to this other extreme. This does actually touch on an actual gameplay criticism I have. The character differentiation isn't quite as robust as I would like it to be. Especially since in many of the core versus modes, you pick a team of three characters. They are different.
Mm.
There are differences. Some of the characters are genuinely different from each other, but there's a certain kind of genericness that kind of settles into a lot of them, and that their attacks are kind of within a relatively small circle of rotation. There's a couple of people that look very asymmetrical. I'm going to be working on unlocking them with one of my fake made-up currencies, but we'll see. I've been having a blast with the hidden ones. It's gotten me fighting strangers online, which I never do.
Yeah.
And they've been very solicitous of feedback in the pre-alpha state. I filled out a very lengthy questionnaire where basically I said over and over and over in the questionnaire, your menus are garbage, your menus are garbage, your menus are garbage.
Yeah.
Because parenthetically, Caitlin, the menus, they're garbage.
They're garbage.
But other than that, I don't really have that much criticism. What initially drew me to the hidden ones, which is a sort of slick, stylish representation of martial arts supernatural violence, has absolutely been manifest. There's a fair degree of spectacle. It looks great. Even though the characters look super dull, what they're doing looks kind of cool. And I've been enjoying all the weird gameplay modes and its sense of experimentation and its sense of fun. And some of the characters look cool. Part of me wonders if these are the characters that were invented by the video game. Bronwyn wonders if these are the characters that showed up for like a limited arc later on in the comic's lifespan when the artist knew they wouldn't have to draw them all the time and had already acquired like a staff or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was blown away by how much I've been enjoying the hidden ones. It has been great. And I'm looking forward to seeing what else it's got for me. And when it releases in a real format, I'm going to be very curious to see how they're going to ruin it with free-to-play nonsense. But so far, in the pre-alpha, it's been firing all cylinders for me.
That sounds amazing. Yeah, I wonder. I am interested in knowing how, if they're in pre-alpha now, and it's March, how they intend to get it to release by the end of the year. But maybe the process that they're thinking of going through is less intense than what I'm thinking of. Because obviously it seems like they have quite a bit of game available for you to play now.
Yeah, it's weird because I came to the Hidden Ones after bouncing off of the open beta for City of the Wolves, the new Fatal Fury game, because the open beta for City of the Wolves did not have any offline modes at all. They didn't even have a training mode available.
Okay.
As I said, I'm generally loathe to go fight random people on the internet. I'm certainly not going to go fight random people on the internet if I don't have a training mode first. So I installed it, saw what was available, and then stopped.
Yeah.
And so I uninstalled it. And But on top of that, I've been hearing that SNK just cannot get good netcode for anything. Apparently, the netcode for the new version of King of Fighters 13 is garbage. The matchmaking is busted. Apparently, the matchmaking for City of the Wolves is also super busted. And people are looking at that beta and saying, yeah, you plan full retail release that soon? How is that going to swing? Again, I don't know what pre-alpha means, but so far the hidden ones in pre-alpha has been perfectly functional. I mean, it's a little janky, but it's janky in the way that a lot of indie releases are. Like, it's got a launcher that you then open and then log into and the whole thing, whatever. It's
menus.
Not super yeah, the menus are garbage, but again, these are things that finished releases in indie titles often have. I mean, hell, Red Dead Redemption has a stupid janky launcher. No one holds against that Rockstar because it's freaking Rockstar.
Yeah.
So I could, look, honestly, if they slapped on some sort of way for me to give them my credit card number and buy fake currency, not that I would do that, they could have released this as a finished product, and I wouldn't have been in a position to quibble, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, there's probably lots that I'm missing, and I'm sure that people in the diehard fighting game community, there's a solid chance that they've already discovered all the exploits and discarded it as garbage, and that may well be true. And for them, that may well be the truth of it. But as I say, for me, it's been a blast. I thoroughly enjoy it. It's been great. And my only real regret is that it will not run on my Odin 2 Portal because there's also an Android version.
Okay. Yeah, it's, I mean, not every game needs to be for the, you know, the best of the best players of the genre, right? Like,
agreed.
It's okay for it to be for the regular people.
Unfortunately, that's not how you get money in a free-to-play model, though. You need to be able to move those units. You need to be able to push that. You got to buy those dances. You got to buy those skins, Caitlin. That's how money is made. And so, as always, I may love the hidden ones, but if it doesn't catch on with the people willing to pump vast sums of money, it might have a very, very short shelf life. So who's to say? Fair. What have you been up to, Caitlin?
I think when I went to go install Avowed on the Xbox like app on the computer, I saw a notification that a little to the left was leaving Game Pass. And I was like, oh, I never finished that. So I decided to sit down and I wrapped it up.
Literally?
Yes, I did. That was accidental, but I'll take it. So I don't recall if I mentioned it before on the podcast, but it's an organizing game. I believe, Mark, that you've played it. But the gist is you get presented with some kind of disorganized scene and you need to organize it. Sometimes it's creating symmetry where there was asymmetry. Sometimes it's stacking things in order of size. Sometimes it's very confusing and you can't figure out what the hell they want you to do until you use the hint. And then you take, it's weird, like you take this little eraser and you, or not eraser, you take something and you move it over the screen and it starts to show you like a drawn version of what the organized one is. And you can erase all of it or only part of it. Whatever. Anyway, sometimes it's confusing, so I used hints every now and then. But the puzzles are kind of cute. It can be a little satisfying. It's a nice thing. It's like not mentally rigorous, so I can just kind of switch my brain off and just move stuff around on a screen. Every now and then, a cat just comes and, like, you know, takes her little paw and kind of shakes it over your stuff and moves things, and, you know, just like a regular cat would if you were trying to do stuff. Very annoying. Thankfully, they don't do it all the time, or that would be actually like a downside of the game. But as it is, it's like cute little bit of flavor. So yeah, I finished playing A Little to the Left.
Well, this is leaving open the A Little to the Left, Little Kitty, Big City crossover DLC, where the little kitty is indeed running over all your stuff because some sleepy mayor told it to.
Wait, hang on. Is that real?
No.
Okay. I was like, wait, could that's feasible. I don't know.
No, this was me just mostly talking crap about cats being jerks.
Yes. Cats can be jerks. But except Parmesan, she loves me and she's the best.
Sure. I figured I would make the connection to Untitled Goose Game, but that would be too far. The goose would, like, break your leg and grab the drawer of whatever you're organizing and shake it with its powerful neck. And then it would just be scattered to the four winds.
Yeah, so that was a little to the left. I only had about an hour left. It's not a very long game, but I played that. And then Monster Hunter Wilds came out.
I somehow knew you would be talking about this, yes.
Yes.
So first question, Caitlin, because I've been seeing a lot of news about the hunting of the monsters in the wilds.
Yeah.
What version are you playing?
Oh, I play on PC.
I have seen that many people are dissatisfied with how it is performing on PC. Have you noticed any problems? And if not, do you assume it is because your hardware is so potent that it can overwhelm any problems?
So I have not had any issues. It could be because my hardware is pretty good on my PC. The other thing is, I just don't notice frame rate issues unless they're really bad. Like, I'm just not one of those people. Like, my brain just fixes it for me. Like, it doesn't bother me unless it's really, really bad. So
your brain has variable refresh rate.
Yes, that's apparently.
That's some good hardware you got installed there. Yeah.
It's funny because there's been a lot of games over the years where I see people complaining about performance. I'm like, what? I don't know. It seems fine to me. But enough people do it that, like, I believe you. I just don't see it personally.
Sure. Yeah, variable refresh rate is the only technology that people talk about FSR and a bunch of other stuff, but variable refresh rate I do notice because I'm not a snob about frame rates, but choppiness is evident. And I'll play a game at 25 frames a second, but if sometimes it's 25 frames a second and sometimes it's 40 frames a second, I'm going to notice that. So obviously the solution, of course, is you set a frame rate cap and just live with it. But I do have some screens with variable refresh rate, and I find that to be very satisfactory.
Yeah. I was reading a little bit, not because I was looking at this myself, but one of my friends who was playing was looking. You know, there's some settings you can tweak, apparently, that can help.
Right.
But yeah, I haven't messed with any of that yet, mostly because I don't notice.
Tweaking settings used to not require a PhD. It's bizarre. Anyway, so the retail release of Wilds is here, and
it is.
How do you find it?
So it's kind of easy, which is an observation that I've seen a lot of people making. In previous Monster Hunter games, I would say it would take at least 20 minutes, generally, to kill a large monster. In Wilds, I'm consistently getting the job done in 5 to 7 minutes.
That is a considerable difference.
Very fast. I don't know if that is something that's limited to low rank and to the story. I have not gotten through all of the story yet, and I don't know anyone yet who has gotten past that. So I'm sure that there's people talking about on the internet, but I don't want to get spoilers. So I've been kind of staying away from anyone talking about Monster Hunter Wilds too much.
I think it's safe to assume, given that internet discourse about video games only works in one way, it's a one-way ratchet. I suspect you have these people who've been hunting monsters for 30 years people who are pretending that they've been hunting monsters for 30 years saying, yeah, it's too easy, they dumbed it down for the noobs. Back in my day, when we hunted a monster, it took 5 hours and we literally had to bleed for it.
Yeah, I mean, I literally saw someone making fun of somebody who started with Monster Hunter World being like, oh, they dumbed it down for the noobs. Where, like, really old Monster Hunter fans are like, no, they dumbed down everything since World. Like, World dumbed it down. So, you know.
Yep.
Yep.
It's good to know that some things never change.
So, yeah. So far, the easiness doesn't affect my enjoyment of it at all. I've only been doing the story missions. The worst thing about the story missions is there's a lot of escorting. Not escorting like you have to protect somebody, you know, from points A to B.
Escorting like no eye contact and no kissing on the mouth?
No. Escorting like somebody is leading you to a new location and you don't have the freedom to be able to move as quickly as you want. You don't necessarily have the freedom to be able to, you know, grab items, pick stuff up while you're traveling. You just have to sit there and listen to them talk, and that's annoying.
I played that game. It was called Red Dead Redemption 2.
Sure, yeah. Probably many of the same flaws.
So the story missions are all new. You didn't have access to that in the beta.
Correct.
And you didn't have access to any of the crafting. I don't know what the cycle of crafting is like in Monster Hunter. I don't know if it's the kind of thing that's like, oh, you don't upgrade your weapons until like 17 hours into the game. What are you talking about? But is there already like satisfying feedback loop going on?
Yeah. Every time I kill a new monster, I generally get enough, you know, monster bits in order to craft at least one new thing.
Cool.
Some of the items I'm kind of saving up because I don't know what I want yet. But generally, at least for me, how I've been handling it is through the story. I think you pretty much have to, like, craft new armor every now and then, even if you think it's kind of ugly, because you really need the added defense because the the defense difference between, you know, the early armor and the later armor that you get is just too big.
I noticed people complaining about that too. I think I saw a headline. These are all like headlines that I don't click on. Being like, yes, this armor is ugly, but it's going to be the best armor you're going to get for the mid game or something like that. And it made me appreciate the fact that in the past couple years, more or less, the entire video game industry has been like, yeah, we need transmogrification for everything.
Yeah.
That everything, it doesn't matter whether it makes sense thematically. We're just going to do it. We're just going to stick it in there. And like, that's what Avowed does. It makes no sense in the context of Avowed. They don't even tell you about it. It's just there in the menus and like, oh, okay, great. Thanks. No, I don't want to look like an idiot. That.
Yeah. And so I was actually upset because I couldn't. Like, I have a few layered armors because I bought the deluxe edition or whatever because...
of course you did.
That's what I do. So there's a few layered armors that you get through that. And layered armor is what they call transmog in Monster Hunter Wilds. But apparently in high rank, when you get to high rank and you start crafting stuff, I read that you'll get layered armor in high rank. So when you're high rank, you can look pretty. In low rank, you look like a clown. Okay. But it is what it is. Very fun to play multiplayer. You can't really do single player together. It's very annoying. So like we create a link party. By the way, Monster Hunter has always been so annoying, like, to figure out how to do multiplayer correctly. Like, I don't know why it's so hard, but it is. But you create a link party, and then somebody starts a quest. And if they are ahead of you in the story, you cannot join them. But if they are behind you in the story, you can. So basically, you know, my husband and I will be playing. He'll get into a quest. I can join his. He can't join mine because I'm, like, one quest ahead of him or something. It kind of sucks, but it's fun enough That's playing weird. Together that... it just works, and eventually we'll be out of the story and we can join each other for whatever. But yeah, that's Monster Hunter.
Especially when there's a free version available on Game Pass. Not that I'm going to jump into a full price release in a series, but how do you think Monster Hunter Wilds is as an intro to the series?
I think as an intro, it would probably be pretty good. They do a decent... okay, so from my perspective, I think they do a decent job of introducing you to the game and the controls, but... I've played so many Monster Hunter games this time that I'm not the best perspective there.
Sure. Well, I'm glad you've been able to take your monster bits and make your little monster costumes. That's great. It's definitely being well received, for the most part, by the Monster Hunter diehards. So this again reminds me that I need to try a Monster Hunter sooner or later. But as I say, it's probably not going to be Wilds. It would probably be Rise, because that's the one that's available on Game Pass. So maybe someday I'll give that a try. But then again... if it's a primarily online cooperative experience, and I don't know anybody who plays Monster Hunter Rise because they've all moved past that, who's to say? It's complicated.
Listen, I will commit to playing Monster Hunter Rise with you when you're ready to do it.
You say these things, Caitlin, but you just don't seem to want to party up with my noob ass on any games we're both playing.
You can... we have to schedule it. But if you schedule it, it'll happen.
I have a time in my calendar when I am willing to suffer noobs. And unless you've been penciled in for noob hour, I'm not going to be suffering noobs.
That's the hours not exactly. for noobs
are from 2:30 a.m. to 3:30 a.m. every alternate Wednesday. The rest of the hours are very clearly labeled as L2P. Check the calendar.
Oh my God.
So we're going to move on to some gaming opinions on old school funware, a.k.a. Goof. And per Caitlin's suggestion... we have Golden Axe, released by Sega in 1989. That is the year of the release of both the arcade version and the Genesis version. There was also a Master System version, which I will possibly dunk on later. But what is your history with Golden Axe, Caitlin?
Okay, so my family was a Nintendo family, and therefore we never had a Sega. We never had a Sega anything until Dreamcast, which I think I bought myself in college.
Solid purchase.
So I never had one. However, I did play Golden Axe at the arcade, which I also didn't frequent the arcade. But when I went, I would spend a little bit of money on Golden Axe and lose my money and then not be able to get very far. And I used to think that I had beaten Golden Axe at an arcade later as an adult. It turns out I don't think it was actually Golden Axe. It may have been Golden Axe 2.
As in Golden Axe, the Revenge of Death Adder?
I have no idea, honestly. All I know is that I didn't recognize the levels of Golden Axe when I was playing this week.
Oh, okay.
So, no idea.
So I was a bit of an arcade rat in the late 80s, early 90s. I was there for the introduction of Street Fighter II, which was obviously a momentous thing. But there were a couple of Sega titles that were absolute cornerstones of my arcade experience. One of them being Golden Axe, the other being E-SWAT. But there's something about Golden Axe. Everything about it in my memory is iconic. The music, the character select screens, a lot of the magic animations, the sounds of those stupid effing thieves as they come and they take your potions, but then you get to dropkick them, which is very amusing and cathartic. All those various little animals, which, by the way, are called Bizarrians.
Bizarrians, I see.
They're called Bizarrians, what can I say? It's a good thing that arcades don't really exist anymore, or that random arcade machines don't exist anymore. I don't think I would be constitutionally able to pass a Golden Axe machine and not put in a quarter. The amount of time that I've spent on those machines is very, very large.
Yeah.
I've gotten much better at Golden Axe now that I've been playing it on emulation. I can beat Golden Axe on 2/4, which is right up there with beating Returnal in terms of things I'm very proud of. This is the work of Makoto Uchida, by the way, who's also the visionary behind Altered Beast, another very, very strange but good Sega title. And also another title that was very influential for the Genesis, because Altered Beast was the pack-in title for a long time. I too was, well, we weren't really a Nintendo household, but in the 16-bit generation, I had a Super Nintendo. I did not have a Genesis. I didn't know anybody that had a Genesis. I was very envious of their pack-in title, which I think just goes to show you how much of a Philistine I was as a younger child, because, look, Altered Beast is great and all, but if you have Super Mario World, you're in no position to be envious of any other system's pack-in title. I'm sorry. But what can I say? Children don't appreciate what they've got.
I really enjoyed the characters. I did actually break out the manual because I was trying to figure out what all of the... Like, I mean, I knew attack, obviously. I knew, you know, use spell. I knew jump. But I also knew that every now and then I did something different with attack. So I had to look it up. And... What? So, attack button, if you hit it 1 to 2 times quickly, it does a quick stab or slice. 3 times, you can either grab super close enemies, do a strong stab at a far away enemy, or a weapon handle jab at a close enemy. 4 times, you do a weapon handle jab at an enemy that's super close, or like, who is on you, whatever that means. 5 times, you kick an enemy who is on you. Like, holy crap. That is...
Yeah.
A very overloaded attack button.
That, I think, is not a particularly illustrative way to explain it. It's just, as a beat-em-up, it omitted some things that are very canonical for beat-em-ups. Like, for example, there's no grappling per se.
Right.
But your attack string will be different based on how far away you are from the enemy. So if you're relatively far away, your attack string is 3 long and will end with a weapon attack. If you're just the right distance, you get the full glory of the slash slash, hit on head twice, kick to face.
Yes.
That's the one that I personally prefer. But generally, your only frames of invincibility in Golden Axe are when you're throwing somebody. And so most of the time, I would, you know, be involved in the attack string. I'd see some dude about to charge me from behind and be like, okay, fine. I guess I don't get to do the full cool thing. Interrupt the attack string, approach enemy more closely, and then engage in the throw.
Okay.
That there is what we call strats.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know that offers invincibility. So that's pretty nice.
And then there's the special attack, which is not a mega crush, unlike how it would be in most other beat-em-ups. But instead, an attack to the rear, which is why I would always play as the dwarf, namely Gilius Thunderhead. Not so much for his magic system, but because his special attack has ridiculous range.
In general, he seemed to have ridiculous range compared to the other two. I played all 3 characters for once. Usually I just play the Amazon lady, but he's amazing.
Tyrus Flair. Say her name.
Yes, Tyrus Flair. And we mustn't forget... Axe Battler.
Yeah, Axe Battler who doesn't wield an axe. This is, okay, this is one thing that never made any sense to me. So the game is called Golden Axe. It's not exactly clear what the Golden Axe is. There are various allusions that Death Adder, solid name for a boss, by the way, might have stolen it. But then again, maybe Gilius Thunderhead is using it? I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. Axe Battler doesn't wield an axe. Tyrus Flair at least uses fire magic, fine. But Axe Battler's name never made any sense to me. It is ridiculous. He is, if anything, wearing fewer articles of clothing than Tyrus Flair.
Yep.
But Gilius Thunder had another reason why I take him, is he's the only one who doesn't look like he would get nippy.
Yes, he is fully clothed as opposed to the other two.
And look, I'll just be perfectly frank. I don't actually mind it in the context of Golden Axe. This is very much Conan derivative. And frankly, I defy anyone to regard anything associated with Tyrus Flair as remotely titillating. Like, I gotta say, as far as like a reasonable representation of chainmail bikini, which is not a sentence I ever thought I would utter in the history of ever, it's fine. So I mentioned it just because it's part of the overall weirdness and glorious, goofy, cheesy fantasy aesthetic of Golden Axe, not because I think it's actually a problematic representation of women in any serious way, but it is like the paradigmatic chainmail bikini.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was not impressed is not the right word. But, you know, Axe Battler and Tyrus wear a similar amount of clothing, you know, for the two of them. It's a bit silly, but it feels normal in the context of it, I guess. The only thing that threw me for a second was the kind of resting, like, camp scenes between levels when they're lying down.
Oh, fair enough. That's
and she's
true.
Like, hey there, buddy. Like, you know, like, lying on her side, like, with her
You're
head
right.
propped up. But Gilius does that almost same exact pose, it feels like. Like, his was also a little bit, like, I don't know, lying on his side. I don't know. It was a bit silly.
That's a good point. No, like, at least another thing, again, while we're on the subject, the way she stands, the way she walks, the way she moves, and all the animation, none of it is designed like, what if I drew her as though she didn't really have a human spine?
Yeah.
Which seems to be what motivates a lot of these animators anyway, right? So again, like, it's all part of a piece. People accuse me all the time. And people who raise reasonable objections to the representation of women in media generally, it's like, oh, you're just a prude. Oh, you're whatever, blah, blah, blah. You're a killjoy. It's like, no, look, there's a broader context here, right? And when you're evaluating a piece of media, all these things matter. And in the context of Golden Axe, like, yeah, it does hit some of the primary notes, but the way that it's executed makes it fine. Like, it's okay. Like, it's not great. I'm not saying it's a feminist work or anything.
Yeah.
But, like, it's fine. Which, given that we're starting from Amazon wearing chainmail bikini, the actual text of the game, it's a minor miracle. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I just have so many memories of Golden Axe. Oh, geez. And I still play it. Like, I finish Golden Axe, like, every other month. Like, reliably. I'm always playing Golden Axe. I remember the first time I clocked that Turtle Village was on the back of a turtle. I'm like, this is amazing! This is world building, said my, 9 to 10 year old self.
Oh, that's cute.
I just love everything about Golden Axe. It makes me happy. It's one of my favorite beat-em-ups.
Yeah, I really enjoyed kind of the special attack where you get to spin around and hit somebody behind you. Gilius is by far my favorite little guy. So I played through as much as I could. I'm not very good at this game. Of the game, once on each character. So I played Tyrus first. I played Axe Battler second, and then Gilius third. Unfortunately, the game Golden Axe crashed on me while I was playing Gilius. I know, it was terrible. But that run was by far the smoothest one that I'd had so far. So I definitely need to go back and try to beat it as Gilius one of these days.
And this was the arcade version, yes?
Yes.
So the Genesis version, I replayed the Genesis version for this discussion. I'd played it maybe 10, 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very much like a lot of Genesis arcade conversions. Pretty good, but not quite there. It feels off. It has that thing that a lot of arcade conversions have, which is where, strangely, things are too fast and they feel slippery, partially as a consequence. Mm-hmm. This is very characteristic of a lot of arcade ports. It's still eminently playable. They fiddle around with some of the levels. They omit the, quite frankly, wonderful ending of the arcade version. The arcade version has this gonzo ending that has to be seen to be appreciated.
Okay.
But it does add, like, a secret area where you basically fight another version of Deathadder again. But it's a very cheap fight, and it doesn't feel satisfying. I had the Master System adaptation from back in the day, because my first home system was a Sega Master System.
Okay.
And I remember playing it and enjoying it. And I do not know what young Mark was thinking. Because it is... So the Genesis adaptation of Golden Axe is like one or two janky, slippery, fast steps removed from the arcade version. And then if you go, say, another 10 to 20 jank steps, then you're going to get to the Master System adaptation. The Master System had some okay games, but I think it's proof to me that I'm not really motivated by nostalgia in my retro gaming, that 9 times out of 10, when I'm going back through the Sega Master System catalog of games that I played as a child, I'm like, this is garbage. This is not good. I can't believe I played this. There's been some exceptions, like the Master System adaptation of Game Ground is very good and very interesting, in part because they're like, we can't actually adapt the arcade version. We'll do a different thing.
Okay.
Rasten is okay. Like, look, there are some okay adaptations. Golden Axe beats nothing, I guess. It's still kind of Golden Axe-y, but for one thing, there's only one character. You play as Axe Battler, and instead of picking your character, you just pick what magic system he uses. So you can play as Axe Battler with Tyrus Flair's magic, or with Gilius Thunderhead's magic, but it's not the same. It's not the same.
Huh. So, okay. This is me being ignorant of Sega, but what is the Master System versus the Genesis?
The Master System was Sega's more or less equivalent of the Nintendo Entertainment System. It was their 8-bit system. The Genesis was their 16-bit system, which is roughly the equivalent of the Super Nintendo. Although the timing doesn't really line up. Like, the Genesis famously was released a long time before the Super Nintendo, and that's one of the reasons why it gained such an advantage and was able to surpass the Super Nintendo in many markets, which led Sega to unfortunately then stumble with the Saturn and the Dreamcast. But
okay, that makes sense. We actually may have talked about that before, and my brain is just, you know, information it's fine. Goes right through it.
As you said, you were a Nintendo household. So in terms of sequels, there's Golden Axe 2 and Golden Axe 3. Both of them were Mega Drive games. I cannot recommend either of them.
Okay.
Then there was a sequel to the arcade. It didn't have a number. It was Golden Axe Revenge of Death Adder. It was released in 1992. It is kind of weird. So it has another character who looks just like Axe Battler, who is not Axe Battler.
Okay.
Gilius Thunderhead returns, but he rides a large man during the entire game as a character. There is a centaur with a weird padded staff thing looking like it's out of American Gladiators. It's strange. There's a lot of weird stuff going on. Who magically grows legs so as to ride the Bizarrians.
Okay. Like,
her horse part shrinks to... Anyway, it's very strange. The magic system has been completely changed. It's no longer a staged system of progressively stronger attacks. You only are able to deploy your magic once, but it's a variable number of potions you need based on the character. Like, some characters have very powerful, like, it's going to kill everything on the screen, but it needs, like, 12 potions, as opposed to some other characters who have weaker magic and need, like... Anyway, it's bizarre, but enjoyable. I don't think it's as good as the original Golden Axe, but it's worth checking out. It's a little hard to emulate. It's a little trickier. You're going to need some more contemporary cores, but it is interesting. Vastly more worthy, I would say, than the Genesis sequels. They have their fans, but frankly, I don't think there's much to recommend them. And you can't beat the original, man. Oh, everything about it. I'm remembering the music now. So many musical associations I have with Golden Axe. All that bit, that bit with Alex stumbling over it. Poor Alex. I've seen Alex die so many times. You can't even believe it.
Oh, poor bastard.
The sound effects as people die. It's so good.
I am mystified right now because I cannot figure out. I almost certainly did not play Revenge of Death Adder because I just looked at it and I definitely do not remember a centaur lady. It must have been Golden Axe, and my memory is crap and I can't remember anything.
Well, it was a while ago.
Yeah. But yeah, I played it co-op with my friend Brandon and we've made it to the end and I was so happy, even though it cost me a lot of money in quarters. I don't remember how much and it's not important.
Money well spent.
It was a lot more than 2 quarters. Let's put it that way.
Well, this is, I say 2 quarters. What I mean is 2 credits on my emulation machine.
Sure.
I haven't actually inserted a quarter into an arcade cabinet in many a year.
Many years.
Well, just as an indication, I was still in arcades after a single quarter wouldn't be able to get you anything.
Yeah.
So who knows? All right. I can talk about Golden Axe for hours, but I think we've hit the major notes. If you haven't tried Golden Axe, it's a very seminal piece of video game history, and it holds up really well, I think, as far as beat-em-ups go.
Yeah, I mean, so for me, the thing that attracted me to it at first was not only can you, you know, walk around and beat things up, but every now and then there's going to be a weird little lizard thing. Or what did you call them? Bizarrians. And you can ride them briefly until you get knocked off of it, blah, blah, blah. But yeah.
Horse girl says 2 thumbs up.
No. Yep. All right. Anyway. Before we jump into the Avowed discussion, let's take a quick ad break.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
And we're back. So, Avowed. Avowed just came out not a few weeks ago, released by Obsidian Entertainment. Mark, why don't you tell us a little bit about Avowed?
So Obsidian is an interesting studio. For a long time, they did primarily adaptations of other people's universes. So they did Knights of the Old Republic 2. They did Fallout New Vegas, despite not having done Knights of the Old Republic or the original Fallout games. They did The Stick of Truth, which was that weird South Park game. They almost went bankrupt a little over 10 years ago, but they crowdfunded Pillars of Eternity, which is a game that I Caitlined, which is to say I bought but have not played. And I've always been vaguely curious about. I'm a little bit more curious about it now, frankly.
Yeah.
And they also more recently did The Outer Worlds. And I forgot they did Pentiment, which is weird.
Oh, so did I. Okay.
So Avowed is in the same universe as Pillars of Eternity. But they've done a very, very good job of grounding it in the Pillars of Eternity lore and universe, but be an excellent entry point for the series because it's in an entirely separate continent. Mm-hmm. So they talk about things that happen elsewhere. They don't come out and say, as you know from Pillars of Eternity 2,
yes.
But they might as well. Like it's very clearly that that's the setup. But it's a place that the games have never been to before, and that indeed the political forces of the main games have only dim contact with, and that's part of, in point of fact, the plot. So you're the Imperial Envoy, the Emperor of the Aedir,
yes.
Has sent his favorite, Mushroom Face, to go to the Living Lands, which is what this continent is called. And it is called that because nature be weird, yo. And a whole bunch of stuff is growing in very strange ways. That's just part and parcel of how that place works. And overall, the aesthetic of both your character creator and of the terrain is somebody who played The Last of Us and didn't understand that the enemies were meant to be horrifying. And so, if you want to have a big old mushroom where your eyes should be, you can do that. You want to have weird stalks growing out of your hair? I was genuinely creeped out by the character creator. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
I was unsettled by some of the visuals. Your little avatar is standing there smiling or whatever, being like, hey, do you want this face? I'm like, no. Get this face off my monitor, please.
Yeah, there's some body horror stuff going on there.
I went with the very, very subtle cop-out option, which is the little red bits along the forehead.
Yes.
I suspect this is going to be a popular option for cowards like me. And the Imperial Envoy shows up, and things very quickly get very complicated.
Very quickly.
This is a first-person RPG. It has drawn a lot of Elder Scrolls comparisons. I think for good reason. Part of the good reason is because of the pedigree of Obsidian doing things like the Outer Worlds and Fallout New Vegas, which feel exactly like Bethesda games, frankly, in a lot of ways. And Avowed is a fantasy first-person action RPG type thing. And so the paradigm established there is for Skyrim. I have seen it described, not entirely unfairly, as Skyrim arcade mode by a number of sources. Do you think that's an accurate characterization?
What makes it arcade mode?
Well, okay, let's get into it. Well, number one, it's a lot simpler than an Elder Scrolls game, both in terms of mechanisms and in terms of your ability to interact with the world on a physical level.
I can see that.
Like, if you walk into a normal household in Skyrim, everything, almost everything, can be picked up and manipulated. And heaven help you if you accidentally pick something up, because everyone's going to try to murder you now for accidentally lifting that cucumber from that shelf.
Yes.
Every guard in the world psychically knows where you are, and they're going to come murder you for it. I have my problems with Skyrim game, the game Skyrim. But anyway, you can't do that in Avowed. There's a small number of things you can pick up. It reminded me a little bit of Cyberpunk in that way. You know, you have these areas that are exquisitely modeled and everything is shown, but there's only a small number of things that are things you can pick up and use. I appreciate that for what it's worth. You get all the graphic feature, but a lot less noise in that context.
My tendency to become quickly over-encumbered with stuff also appreciates that.
Yeah, I never was in any danger of getting encumbered. I thought I'd have to, you know, dump points into strength because, again, I was approaching it kind of like Skyrim. But nah, it's never really an issue.
Yeah.
You can be a pack rat. So many things don't weigh anything. Like, food doesn't weigh anything. So you can have your 53 spring berries so you can cure yourself of poison and everything's going to be fine.
Yeah, and you can break up armor and weapons from your bags. So if you become over-encumbered, you're just like, oh, let's just break that down into some materials that don't weigh anything.
Also, Avowed, in terms of your character build, is vastly simpler than what you would experience in most other action RPGs, frankly, especially the first-person variety. There's a smaller number of skills, a smaller number of abilities, a smaller number of stats. And also, I think, to give credit where credit is due, the combat is more viscerally satisfying than it is in Elder Scrolls games, and I would say even than in Fallout games. Like, I always felt, when playing those Bethesda games, like I was just waving a weapon around in midair, and I would see bars go down.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, that was my experience of the thing. Whereas when playing Avowed, whether I'm engaged in swordplay, whether I'm engaged with a gun, and those are mostly, to be frank, the two things that I do, or whether I'm using a shield, things feel like they have weight. Mm-hmm. I feel like I know what's going on. There's a certain amount of chaos, sure, but it feels like I'm swinging a sword, and I'm conscious of individual strikes rather than some sort of frenetic weirdness.
Yeah, when I hit somebody with an arrow, they move a little bit as if I actually hit them with an arrow. Granted, they don't instantly die like they should if I hit them with an arrow in the eyeball, but that's okay. Video game characters have hit points. I get it.
You seem to be speaking from personal experience, but we're just going to breeze past that. And so I generally find that the sundry combat abilities, although there's a smaller universe of them, feel a little bit more satisfying in a vaguely twitchy kind of way. And I get a sense of visual and auditory feedback from combat in a way that Skyrim, I never really did.
Mm-hmm.
And so it feels more arcadey in that sense as well. And then there's also the platforming segments. There's a non-trivial amount of platforming. So all these things together make me give me a strong arcadey vibe in the context of first-person action RPGs.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, combat, I found combat to be serviceable. Like, I didn't love it, but it was still, like, I don't know. I don't go into it and be like, oh my god, this is such a slog. and, you know, in Skyrim, I think I played, like, a mage or something. So I just, you know, throw fireballs, do a dragon shout thing every now and then. Just, like, please get them out of here. And, yeah, I think it's pretty okay. I enjoy headshotting enemies repeatedly with my bow and arrow. I'm playing as a ranger because I find that fun. The worst thing about it so far for me, and I don't know if this is actually a problem if you're playing in first person. I play exclusively in third person because I don't want to barf, and I'm really appreciative that third person exists. But one of the characters that you get later can put this protection spell on you that surrounds you in a very difficult to see through purple orb.
Yeah. Her effects generally add to a fair amount of visual confusion even when you're playing first person.
Okay, yeah, because I'd be like, wait, I can't see the dude. Like, I have to look for the weird little diamond that tells me that somebody's head is there in order to hit them because I can't see anything through it.
Well, I guess I know who you're leaving at camp then.
No, actually, I love that character and I bring her everywhere, but her spells annoy me.
Fair enough. Yeah, for what it's worth, despite the fact that I'm talking about how much better it is than Skyrim, I agree with you. I think that the combat is serviceable and pretty good, right? And obviously this is a sliding scale. Like, we used roughly the same terms, I recall, when talking about the first Hellblade.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously the combat in Avowed is better than the combat in Hellblade, like, but it's carrying a heavier load.
Yeah.
Than it did in Hellblade, right? So given the amount of time you're going to be spending on it, the amount of focus that it's on, it gets the job done. It is fine. Whereas, again, I agree with you, in many contexts in Elder Scrolls game, I'm like, oh, another fight. Oh. That's one of the reasons why I think, at least speaking personally, I would always be drawn towards stealthy, sniperish builds.
Mm-hmm.
Because if a fight actually breaks out, it's a chaotic mess. So I'd rather just be able to kill something before it even knows I'm there.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I played Mage. Well, I mean, okay. Combat would actually happen because I wasn't stealthing and, you know, backstabbing somebody for all of their health. But I would just hold in S to walk backward and throw fireballs at them until they were dead.
Yeah, I know a number of people who did stealthy ranger type builds would do the same things in Elder Scrolls. Anyway, yeah. So I think we can now talk about Avowed on its own terms, independently of its comparison to Skyrim. I was completely unprepared for Garrus Vakarion to be in.
I know! I was so happy!
Now, for whatever reason, they don't call him that. They call him Kai.
Weird.
And for some reason, he's wearing some strange armor that makes him look like a scaly lizard man. But whatever. I know Garrus Vakarion when I hear him. And this is totally Garrus Vakarion.
Mm-hmm.
And I am willing to do any number of things to spend more time with my boy Garrus.
Same.
I just have to say, Brandon Keener is the name of Garrus Vakarion's voice actor, and he also voices Kai. I've watched clips of him being a actor in real life, like a real person actor.
Yeah.
There, he sounds and looks like some dude. But when he does voice work, he always sounds to me like Garrus Vakarion. It's very strange.
Huh.
I love his voice. I love Kai.
Yeah.
Kai's awesome.
He is.
So the characters in general, it's weird because a lot of people are complaining about the companions in Avowed. I love all of them.
Huh. I'm a little surprised. I'm almost wondering if part of it is just like, well, they aren't all hot enough for me.
Sure. There's no romance. You can't romance any of your companions. You will be going stag to the end of the world. I see why they did it, for one thing. There's only like four companions available.
Yeah.
Frankly. There's a smaller number, and I just don't think they wanted to deal with that. It's a whole thing, and it's okay. I mean, that's all right. It's just the companions, they talk to each other a lot.
Yeah.
They're very illuminating and charming. The first two companions you have, they bicker in a way that makes me love them both so much.
Yes.
It's adorable. I keep waiting for them to start making out in the middle of camp. Maybe that's why there's no romance. Anyway, no, it's just they will spend any amount of time explaining to you, the Imperial Envoy, how the other one is an untrustworthy, unreliable, annoying, incompetent nincompoop. And it is so clear that they have so much regard and affection for each other. It is amazing. I love it.
Yeah, those two are wonderful. I mean, so far, I've met three of the four playable characters, and I've really loved them all. They all have their own, you know, kind of personality quirks. Dwarf Man has not opened up to me yet, and I'm still waiting for him to. But it's, I don't know, they're fun. I enjoy them. I generally like how they're all written. I'm there for all three of them, and eventually four of them, I'm sure.
My only problem with the Dwarf Ranger companion is that his name is Marius, and so whenever I'm talking to him, I have various songs from Les Misérables running in my head. But that's not exactly his fault.
Yeah, yeah.
So, what do you think of the story of Avowed?
Okay, so I've been enjoying it a lot. I think every now and then it feels like the writing can be a little bit uneven, especially with side characters. Sometimes they say something and I'm like, that feels a little weird. But I've been enjoying the story so far quite a bit. So far, I'm enjoying it. You're sent to the Living Lands to find out, you know, what's the deal with this weird plague that's going on. You find it very quickly, or it finds you. I don't know. But, you know, first thing in the game, your ship gets destroyed by a bunch of soldiers who have been overtaken by this plague. So you're right into the middle of it. I'm not going to go into too many of the beats of the actual story after that, but just kind of the how they tell the story and how they let you make decisions, I think, is really neat. I don't feel like there's been a lot of situations in the game so far where you're forced to make a decision and that you know all the information about whether your choice is the right one or not. And there's no way of knowing. I mean, you get to pick kind of like what your relationship is going to be with your country. You pick your relationship with this weird voice that starts talking to you when you arrive in the Living Lands and you don't know what it is. But you can choose to be open with them or suspicious.
Hostile.
Yeah, hostile. Openly hostile. And I've really enjoyed that so far. I'm normally the kind of person who I regret to say will every now and then be like, okay, I don't know, I'm just going to Google this quest name. What should I pick? But there's not a clear answer for everything because there's pluses and minuses, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how the decisions I make affect the story going forward, because I've already seen some of them do that. You know, if you spare somebody, you know, members of that faction are going to be a lot more open to you later. And it's really cool to see how your decisions shape future quests and storylines.
And members of other factions will think you're an idiot.
Yes.
For having done such a thing. And your companions will tell you right away what they think about what you're doing. And not entirely unlike Keanu Reeves from Cyberpunk, they have their own perspective. They're not speaking on behalf of the game. They're just speaking on behalf of their own set of priorities and values.
Yeah.
I was about 3 or 4 hours into Avowed, and I was starting to get a little bit, not concerned, but a little bit curious, because, you know, the platforming is kind of okay. It's better than it could have been, right? The combat's kind of okay. It's better than it could have been. And the writing is solid, but whatever. And here I am running around. And then a number of things start to happen where it made me realize, to use a phrase that I sometimes use, that the plot of Avowed is playing with live ammo. This isn't a standard hero's tale. There's elements of the hero's tale in it. Mm-hmm. But this isn't a straightforward story of, you know, the foreign conqueror coming and interacting with this strange place. This is a story about colonialism, about compromise, about identity, about loyalty, about war, about pacifism, about autonomy, all these things. And serious things go down. Some of them are under your control, some of them not. And I knew that I was completely hooked when I was getting Dragon Age 2 vibes. Because the thing that I love about Dragon Age 2, and for all its faults, it puts you in these compelling situations where you see the merit in both sides and it forces you to pick, and then sometimes things just don't work out.
Yeah.
And video games so seldom do that. And Avowed does it all the time. One of the things that I just did before recording was I finished a side quest, and there were these people who are native Living Landers who hate the adherents, who hate the people for who you're the envoy. And everyone knows you're the envoy because, again, have I mentioned Mushroom Face. And so you show up, like, oh, you're the envoy, F off, we're going to leave or we're going to kill you, blah, blah, blah. And then suddenly, a dialogue option was, hey, wait, but I did this other optional side quest 2 missions ago. Doesn't that matter for anything? And they're like, oh, that was you? Oh, well, that might change things. And that completely changed the tenor of the conversation. Mm-hmm. And suddenly we're having a discussion about something else entirely. Both of these were side quests. Unrelated side quests. I'm not going to say that this level of detail is present in everything in Avowed. Like, the quest structure isn't all that complicated. Again, it's a very simple RPG structure. Mm-hmm. It's not for people who like tinkering around the margins of builds and things like that. But the writing and the structure is enough to make you feel like the story matters and that you have some control over it and that the things going on are playing with some big ideas.
Yeah.
And for that reason alone, I would be willing to put up with a lot. And frankly, Avowed doesn't ask me to put up with much. And it is making me completely in love with Avowed. If I were not recording this with you right now, I would be playing Avowed.
Yeah.
It is the thing I am doing.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a real struggle for me this past week, having both Monster Hunter Wilds and Avowed.
But a good struggle, right?
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoy having two games that I both really want to play. So right now, like, Avowed is my single player game, and when other people want to play, I'll hop into Wilds. But I'm having such a good time. I love the characters. The quests are fun and interesting. I like stumbling across things while I'm playing. It's really well done. And I mean, it doesn't feel exactly like, you know, Skyrim or whatever, for example. You know, it's not a huge, I mean, it kind of feels like a huge game, but, you know, it's a little bit pared down, I guess. But it's good. It's really good.
I agree with you. The scope is just perfect for me and what I want right now, right? Yeah. Not everything has to be the scope of Skyrim. Not everything needs to even be the scope of something like Elden Ring.
Yeah.
The map is just big enough to make me feel like it's an organic, plausible world, but it's not going to ask me to wander around in the forest for 3 hours to get from point A to point B to unlock the next fast travel checkpoint.
Yeah.
With like a series of random nothing encounters in between. It feels curated and edited. Like everything about it talks about editorial intent. And there are random encounters, sure, but I get the sense that they were all purposive. And it's so artificial and gamey, but it works really well. When there's a chest nearby, or when there's something to pick up, there's this sort of fairy tinkling noise.
Yep.
That you hear that gets louder as you get closer. And I generally don't like just exploring for the sake of exploring, but if I'm going from point A to point B for a quest and I hear that tinkle, I'm going to go find it.
Same.
Or at least I'll try.
Yeah.
Or at least I'll try. Sometimes I don't make it. Sometimes I'm not able to find it. Most of the time I am. Avowed isn't particularly challenging.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just little bits of detail here, there, and everywhere.
Yeah, it's a little something that's like, hey, you can explore this area a little bit more. Why don't you? And it's like, yes, I want loot.
Absolutely. It knows when to pull back and it knows when to zoom in. And I really appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of the story is geopolitical, but a lot of the story is deeply personal at the same time. And sometimes it's about the intersection of those two things. And I really like the way that it's really making me think about what I'm doing and why.
Yeah.
I was expecting to be bothered by, based on the setup of the plot of Avowed, I was expecting to be bothered by how trivially they were going to take things. Because mm-hmm. they set the story up, I'm like, this sounds fraught. Okay, I'll give it a chance. And then very quickly it becomes clear that the game knows that it's fraught. If you want to play it that way. If you want to play it straight, I'm the loyal soldier of the Empire, shut up or die, you can do that, that's fine.
Yeah.
That's an option you have available to you. But if you like wrestling with issues of divided loyalty and colonialism, Avowed is there for it, and it is going to do it and lean into it hard. And as you say, I am frequently in a position where it's like, I see the merit in both choices, I don't know what to do. And I love games like that. And again, too few games do that.
Yeah, too often you're choosing between the obviously right / paragon thing to do and the obviously wrong / renegade thing to do. And you don't have to, that's not how it has to be. And Avowed doesn't let that be the only way that you can do stuff. So I really enjoy that.
I mean, there are quibbles. Like, I really don't like how it deals with theft. It doesn't really. But sometimes it draws attention to it. Like, for example, there's no notion of theft in the game of Avowed. Yeah. There might be like somebody might be standing around and giving you a side quest, and right directly to the right is like a pack full of treasure, and you go take all the stuff. And they might sometimes give you make a snippy comment about how you just took their stuff.
I'm like,
I either make it theft or don't, Avowed. Don't do it both ways. Like, this is just making it feel awkward.
Yeah. No, it makes it feel really awkward. I mean, at one point, I walk up to this old temple, and I see some stuff, and I'm like, well, this is a video game. I'm going to loot the stuff. And then Kai is like, well, I guess if anybody can loot a temple, it's a godlike. And I'm like, oh, should I not be doing this?
Yeah.
Is this wrong?
Obviously, I'm not suggesting that they handle things the way Skyrim did. That was too far.
Yeah.
But frankly, I would have just been happier if they just not made those things pick upable. Like, don't elude it, and it's so out of character with everything else that it does.
Yeah,
your actions have serious consequences in Avowed, and how you resolve these random side quests might come to bite you 5 hours later, or even 2 hours later, or whatever. So then don't have this other area where you're just going to be glib about it, and where nothing matters except we're going to call attention to it. Like, that's completely contrary to the tone and quality of the rest of Avowed. It just sticks out like a sore thumb, I think.
Yeah. It felt like a funny little in-joke the first time, but then that wasn't the only time that it got brought up, and I was like, oh, I don't, this is crossing, like, a line to where, like, I don't know what I want anymore.
Yeah, like, even if they'd done one of the things that Skyrim does, like, just highlight items that belong to somebody else differently, I'm not asking you to have the entire legal system, but then at least make it a character choice about whether or not I want to loot somebody's house.
Yeah.
As it is, I don't know if I'm looting somebody's house.
Yeah.
It's just a whole bunch of stuff.
Maybe they left anyway. That cucumber there for me. How am I supposed to know?
Everything else in Avowed is done with such intent and with such calculated editorial voice that aspect just seems like they kind of dropped the ball. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if they were building towards some sort of more elaborate system of property and theft and then just cut it out. That's what it feels like, frankly.
Yeah,
it feels
that's
like a missing
fair.
Feature. But other than that, the plot is amazing. The overall way it's told, I think, is supremely well done. I feel a sense of ownership over what's going on.
Yeah.
And everything else is at least good enough to pull off the rest of it. And it makes it a world that I am very, very eager to inhabit and explore. And now, frankly, I'm kind of curious about Pillars of Eternity, to be honest.
I was thinking exactly the same thing. I also, you know, bought and then never played Pillars of Eternity. I'm pretty sure I own Pillars of Eternity 2 as well. And, you know, obviously, same. Hearing about these events that I know, because I Googled it, took place during one of the earlier Pillars of Eternity games, I'm intrigued, like, because this world is cool, and I would be into playing other stuff in this world.
And also, if they're able to carry through this attitude about storytelling and of stakes and of ideas into prior games, absolutely. Like, I've been spoiled for the events of Pillars of Eternity 2. It takes place in an entirely different world. The Living Lands are entirely removed. They're like, we don't know what the rest of you mainlanders do. The Uadirians look and sound funny to me. And then you're like, you guys only settled this place 30 years ago. What's your damage? Anyway, as I say, a lot of conflicting ideas flying around.
Yeah.
But despite the fact that I've been spoiled for the events of Pillars of Eternity 2, I'm still kind of curious.
Yeah.
It sounds awesome. Sounds like an interesting story.
It sounds super awesome. Yeah. I'm like, let's go.
Well, I'm very glad to hear that you've been enjoying Avowed. I was not sure what I was expecting, but I am thoroughly pleased with what I've got.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking forward to living in this world a little bit longer.
Same. And I've also been really, so, I mean, part of this might be the kind of accidental Bethesda comparison, but I have been pretty satisfied about the quality of everything. Like, I'm not hitting a ton of bugs. I've hit a couple. One particularly funny one was I got randomly attacked by somebody who I didn't think in-universe would attack me without provocation. I killed them. And then after the fight was over, they started talking to me. And they're like, hey, you know, you should turn back and go do something else. And it's like, but you're dead. You are dead.
But, sure. And this was unlike the other voice in your head that we know is supposed to be a voice in your head.
Yes. Like, Kai's like, we should go around unless we want to fight these guys. And it's like, buddy, that ship has sailed. They are dead on the ground. But anyway, generally, I haven't run into too many issues.
I have heard some reports of bugs. Like, our mutual friend Chris has encountered some very serious bugs, in point of fact.
Yes, and crashes,
but,
I think.
Also just a colossal failure of the game's AI in general. Enemies aren't attacking him, as a rule.
Oh,
so
my.
I've heard of issues, but I have not encountered any of them, and it's been running perfectly fine for me.
If anything, the enemies attack me too much. Like, please go listen to Kai. He is the tank. Please go talk to him.
All comments can be directed to Garrus Vakarian, care of the Citadel.
Yes.
And the Living Lands. Yeah, so Avowed's up on Game Pass. Give it a try. You got nothing to lose.
Yeah.
Except for maybe a 3-month free subscription or whatever. I just can't. I say it all the time. Game Pass is an amazing deal. Just I would have paid $80 for Avowed.
Same.
Like, knowing how good it is. I wouldn't have bought it if I hadn't tried it first, but it is absolutely worth $80, I think. And if it were delisted from Game Pass tomorrow, I would buy it tomorrow.
Yeah.
With that in mind, let us head on to the shameless hyping of upcoming titles, what we call Shout. Caitlin, what would you like to shout out for us?
Today, I'm going to shout out Dark Deity 2. I've never played the first one, but Dark Deity 2 kind of came across. One of my friends sent me a link to it on Steam. It has like pretty cool pixel art graphics paired with this anime style portrait art. It's a strategy role-playing game inspired by Fire Emblem, and it looks pretty cool. It's supposed to be out probably a week or two after this episode is out, and there's a demo on Steam, which I haven't tried yet because Monster Hunter Wilds and Avowed, but it looks neat, so I'll probably check that out at some point in the next couple weeks.
I looked at Dark Day 82 as well, and it is very much doing Fire Emblem, like the Game Boy Advance style of Fire Emblem. Those animations look like they would have been just at home in those games. And I was vaguely curious, but here's an indication of how shallow I am, Caitlin. I did a quick search. Is there romance in Dark Deity? And they said no. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Never mind.
Well, no, because look, there are tons of Fire Emblem games I haven't played yet.
Yeah.
Right? And if I can play matchmaker in a game like that, I'd like to. So it's a question of prioritization, right?
Yep. Yeah. No, that's
this
totally
isn't like
fair.
If there's no romance. It's not like if there's no romance, I'm not going to play it. I mean, I'm playing the hidden ones and I'm playing Avowed, right?
Yeah.
It's not like a necessary feature. Just it did get me sufficiently intrigued to ask the question. Similarly for pixel graphics, I would like to shout out Neon Inferno. There's a demo of this available on Steam. It is a run and gun. I had a great time with the demo. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It does a thing that I don't think I've ever seen in a run and gun before. Most of the time it is a side-scrolling run and gun a la Contra or any number of other such games, but every once in a while there are going to be enemies in the foreground and you have to swap to firing into the foreground a la arcade games like Cabal or Blood Brothers or somewhat more recently for the Super Nintendo Wild Guns or even Bot Vice, which is a relatively recent indie game that my friend TechDweeb really adores. And sometimes you have enemies in both planes, and so you have to juggle back and forth between shooting in the foreground with a reticle and just running and gunning like you would in Contra. It's really well done. It's pretty slick, and I had a great time with it. It is coming out to full release sometime in 2025, I am told, from Zenovia Interactive, and I'm looking forward to it. I'll probably buy it when it launches.
It looks really cool. Like, I would try that.
Neon Inferno.
All right. And that does it for this episode of All My Best Friends Are Digital. If you'd like to support our video game podcasting endeavors, you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/amfad. If you don't know what the heck AMFAD is, it's just the first letter of each word of our name, AMBFAD.
This, I think, is Caitlin subtly throwing shade at my tendency towards acronyms.
I hope you all have a wonderful week, and we'll see you next time.
Take care, everyone. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to get in touch, you can reach us at allmybestfriendsaredigital@gmail.com. Hope to see you again soon.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.